It's Friday, July 27th, 2018, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 230, Jafar Forgot His Parrot. The runtime for this episode is 1 hour, 4 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that, through the power of editing, can re-say anything we want. My name is Jeremy.
I'm Horatio. Wait, no, that's not right. Let me try that again. I'm Tyler.
You stole mine, Tyler. My name is Zach.
Oh, was that actually going to be your thing?
That was what I was going to say. Not Horatio, but the same idea.
You know what? Like, half the time, Jeremy steals mine, so I have to come up with something on the fly, and it doesn't always work.
And unfortunately, because you stole mine, I couldn't be clever this time around, and I couldn't make fun of you, which is usually how I appear clever.
I'm increasingly thinking that Zach's theory that we're the same person might be right.
It's not a theory.
I found this to be true with a large number of people, though. Like Dan, for example.
Okay, maybe you're just good at finding your people.
Yeah, I think mostly that.
See, I'm just the most unique person.
That must be it.
Exactly. I'm amazing.
So, Captain Amazing, what have you been playing this week? Before we get to Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, our assignment.
Captain Amazica.
I was on vacation for a couple days, so that meant I did absolutely nothing. I played some more Frostpunk. I had a scout team with a bunch of really valuable pieces of equipment on them die, which kind of sucked.
Didn't they get electrocuted?
Yeah.
I feel like I heard this story.
They got electrocuted.
By what?
Tesla City.
What?
Yes.
I'm very confused. Is there, like, another settlement out there that's entirely powered by Tesla coils or something?
I don't know exactly how it is. Like, they just come up to a city that's basically got a generator or electrical system that is going haywire. And I guess there's, like, a 50% chance that your guys get electrocuted and die.
That's an inordinately high risk.
I did not know that was the risk. I didn't know that was the level it was at. But I was playing a bit more of that. I might be getting myself into a bad spot because I'm running out of coal. Like, I'm basically out of coal on a regular basis now, which is not good.
Have you switched to solar power yet?
No, because that game, you can't. The whole premise is the sun is gone. Basically.
Have you tried nuclear?
So, no, because it's kind of all. It's also kind of like a steampunk type thing.
What about
thing.
Geothermal?
No. It's only coal. These guys only know about coal.
What about renewable steam?
No.
Renewable
ghost coal.
Steam.
Ghost.
This thing from Ghost Rock.
So I played a bit of that. I played a lot of League of Legends. They have their Versus event going on between Darius and Garen. I think Garen is going to lose because people apparently like anarchy and just general being dicks. So, you know,
yeah,
that's
have
normal.
You been on the internet, Zach?
Yeah, I have. I have. So I'm used to that. So I played a bunch of that. I actually played a couple games of MechWarrior Online, because that's one of those games that I ever so often jump back into. Had a couple of pretty good games. I had one game where I got the achievement, Crap, I'm Gonna Die, which was apparently survive a match with less than 40% HP remaining. So I, at the end of the match, I was missing both arms and one leg. I was just kind of hanging out.
I'll gnaw your ankles off.
I had no guns left because the mech I was piloting had all of its guns in its arms. I was taking just sitting there taking a position because like I can't fight anybody if I ran into him. I'm just going to sit here and take this thing because it's all I can do. I did that again on a different map, but I didn't get that low on HP. I just was like, all right, I'm going to avoid the fight, let the assault guys fight it out. I'm going to go take some positions. And I did that the same thing earlier today. I took a map and basically helped win the game by taking the enemy base without ever firing a shot at somebody. Because I did this big old loop around the battlefield and ended up in the enemy base and just stood there and took the base away. Like, all right, I'm just going to sit here for the next 5 minutes, waiting.
And then you win.
And then we win. I had a different game where I lost. I was trying to do something similar in my dinky little cougar. I won a duel against a guy in a vulture, which is a mech that's almost twice as heavy as the mech I was piloting.
Yeah, I always wondered how like lighter mech matchups work in that game. Like, do you feel completely outclassed, or is the maneuverability enough of a bonus?
It really depends on what you're doing and if the person is good enough. Because if they're good enough, it can really negate your advantages, but this guy kind of wasn't, so I was able to leverage the autocannon that I was using and my mech's maneuverability to avoid getting killed.
But I guess, like, are equally skilled pilots in disparately sized mechs always going to, like, is the heavier one always going to win?
The heavier one is going to start at a base level advantage. It's not going to be all the time, but I'd give the heavier one the advantage, so probably like 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that they have more guns to shoot, they have more armor, to make up for mistakes. The light guy basically has to be perfect. And okay. if anybody comes in to help either side, the heavier guy's going to be still in a bit better of a position if it's a lighter mech still. Whereas the light mech isn't going to be kind of hosed to begin with if anybody else shows up. That game is kind of fun. It's still kind of on the predatory side of free-to-play games. Well, because of how expensive free content is, basically. It takes so long to get anything.
Gotcha. That it really incentivizes just buying it.
It's at least it's not Knights of the Old Republic that charges you for action bars.
That is true. They charge you for mech bays. They charge you to change your mech's loadout. They charge you for skill points. They charge you for mechs in general.
So this has reminded me of something. Have any of us heard any news about Star Citizen recently?
I looked at something recently, and I don't remember what it was. It might have been, like, Operation Normal.
Continuing to pace. I know they had dogfighting a little while ago, and it was surprisingly good, so...
I haven't been paying any attention to Star Citizen, because I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, Ed owns a copy, which kind of de facto means I own a copy, so... When he's not playing it...
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is that. And, like, the last thing I've been doing is... Just a lot of grinding in Dokkan Battle. I have a lot of grinding I have to do to raise super attacks and all that stuff, so...
Everything is open because it's the third anniversary.
Technically, it's not the third anniversary yet.
It's the third anniversary countdown celebration.
Yes.
Followed closely by the third anniversary celebration, followed by the post-celebration celebration.
Yes.
Yes. And drinking.
Do you get that one version of drunk Goku?
Well, you gotta pull him.
No, you get tipsy Videl.
OP.
I think it's more a matter of there's going to be a lot of drinking among Dokkan players, the guys that don't pull the LRs that really wanted them, because it's the dual Vegito and Gogeta LR celebration, basically. So there's that.
Anything else, Zach?
Watching live streams and streams in general of... Both League of Legends, the LCS, which has got a still weird as hell meta, and people playing that new FNAF Ultimate Custom Night. Finally, I actually watched Markiplier. Like, I'd heard of him, but never really paid attention to him.
I don't actually like Markiplier that much.
I don't dislike him.
I wouldn't say that either, but...
Well, it was one of those things where I watched him. Like, I can understand why a lot of people like watching him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I don't have a problem with it, but in all honesty, most of the content he's probably putting out isn't my thing. So it's like, okay, that's... I can definitely understand why he's popular.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mentioned before we started recording, Alex's sister was really into him. And, like, I can see why, but it's not my bag. So.
Yeah, and generally speaking, like, Five Nights at Freddy's type games and horror games aren't really my thing. But I kind of enjoy watching people play them because I have no desire to play them myself. But they're usually, at least the ones that have come out, like the big popular ones, are fairly, like, intensive and interesting. Especially because, like, I like watching game theory and... Since they delve into stuff like that, that's where I kind of got attached to the FNAF series as a thing, was watching MatPat talk about it.
What? Tangentially related. Have you heard of the subreddit, Thanos Did Nothing Wrong?
No.
Which I feel...
Thanos did everything wrong, because you've seen that movie, right?
No, I have not yet.
At the end of that movie, he has a gauntlet that gives him control of the entire universe. He could snap his fingers and there are 100 times as many resources as before. He does not have to half the population.
Yeah, I feel like he could have come up with a more creative solution, but he is a little insane.
Yeah, I think it's an intentional character flaw. I just think saying Thanos was right is insane. It proves that you are in league with a man that's literally called the Insane Titan. It's in his job title.
Technically, isn't his title the Mad Titan?
Well,
Yes.
The
but
Cuckoo
it's not the
Titan.
Angry Titan.
He is also that occasionally, but...
I feel like he never gets angry in that movie.
I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
Okay.
I feel like generally Thanos does occasionally get angry.
Yes, that's true. Comic book Thanos, frequently angry. Comic book Thanos, very different character.
But
anyway, there's a subreddit called Thanos Did Nothing Wrong. I only mention this because MatPat did a video titled exactly that. But the subreddit recently announced an event because people on the subreddit kept asking for it, where the mods are going to ban half of the people on the subreddit and presumably add the half of the people who are banned to... In the Soulstone, which is a subreddit that recently got created. All you have to do to participate in this stupid event is comment or post on the sub. But apparently it's causing problems for Reddit because they're, like, not sure if they can handle such a large ban simultaneously.
It was not designed for that. I suppose that makes sense.
About the only Reddit I look at is the Dokkan Battle Reddit, because why the hell not?
Anything else, Zach?
Trying to think. I don't think so. I mean, other than a little bit of the assignment, I wanted to get into Steins Gate, but... When I was sitting there getting ready to, you know, start basically anything, I was like, I don't feel like getting into basically anything at the moment. Oh, I played a lot of BattleTag. And they one of the things that they added in one of the patches was they added a bunch of different events so things can get changed up. And I accidentally fired one of my pilots because I didn't know what would happen if I picked a certain thing on the event.
And the thing was fire your pilot.
And
apparently,
the event basically came out as fire my pilot. And I was like, oh, crap. Because I've got like, at this point, none of the four starting pilots that your crew starts with, other than my character, are alive at this point. They've all died. So, and a bunch of my other pilots have bit the big one too. So my like top rated pilots, the 410s, because that's as high as the skills go, are dropping like flies. So,
whoops.
But think of all the money you'll save not buying his health insurance.
Yeah, but now I got to hire somebody else and train up that loser. So it took me a little while to get back into it because I encountered like a bug where a mission critical character's mech got squished by the incoming dropship. For the mission end, like the mission end evacuation dropship killed it.
Nice.
It didn't count it as like a mission fail or anything like that, but...
But then he was dead?
Well, I don't know if she was... I don't think she was dead, but her mech was destroyed, and it was supposed to be that thing. So I'm assuming when it comes up again, I'm going to have her mech when she joins me again, but she's like an NPC that every so often joins you for specific missions.
Gotcha.
So...
She'll just have the whatever her mech was custom. It'll have an eye patch. Gundam Build Divers is not a good anime, but the third episode or so, the plot is that the champion is smurfing to try to find some like low-level hackers, and his Gundam is normally the Double Age O2, so he goes around in the pirate Double Age O2, and also he goes around wearing a mask, and one of the main characters is like, that's sketchy as hell, and the other's like, not everyone in Gundam wears a mask, it's totally normal.
I could go for an Atlas 2 Reborn that doesn't have those, I don't like her mech, but... That's not a hero.
It'll probably have more PPCs.
Well, I mean, having one would be more, because her mech doesn't have any PPCs. It's got twin large lasers, an autocannon, an SRM rack, a couple medium pulse lasers, and LRM-20. And I can't find any goddamn Atlases. It's starting to really tick me off. I have two pieces of an Atlas, and I can't get the third.
I felt that way in Subnautica for a long time, because I could not find that last goddamn piece of a Cyclops, which is the only thing I needed to progress the game.
Yes, but that doesn't get your pilots killed.
Well, they got me killed several times.
You're not important. So you don't have skill points that are put into pilots and ranking them up.
No, I don't.
You don't even lose half your money when you die.
In that case, what have you been doing, Tyler?
I was sick on Tuesday, so I had an unexpected day off. And I also had that evening free, which is an unexpected, like, that's an uncommon occurrence recently. So, of course, I squandered it and did very, very little interesting. I played a lot of Enter the Gungeon. I got the furthest I've ever managed to get. And then died anyway, because that's how that game works.
Did you die to doing something stupid? Because that's how I've usually encountered stuff like that. I get really far because I'm doing amazing, and then I do something really stupid and die.
Yep, pretty much that, actually. I did amazing on the first level, and also the second level, and then I got cocky and started doing a bunch of dumb stuff instead of being cautious, and yep, that's normally how that goes. But while I was playing that, Alex was like, hey, did they ever release the third episode of The Lawn Dark? I'm like, I don't know. I should go find out. And I found that they release a major update to The Lawn Dark and are basically reconsidering the whole story mode idea because apparently not very few people actually liked it.
Were you one of them? I don't remember.
I liked it all right. It was pretty mediocre. Dragon spots, it could have used some fine-tuning, I think, but it was not bad.
So are they looking more to just making it a pure survival experience now?
Yeah, and to that end, they've added a couple more areas, and they've revamped a couple of the core systems, so you have to enter your inventory screen a lot less frequently. You can do a lot more stuff from just, like, interacting with the environment. One of the biggest changes, which sounds like a small change, but it has considerable ramifications, is that you no longer have to sit at a fire while your cooks. So, you just stick it next to the fire, and then it tells you how long it's going to take until it's done cooking.
So kind of like how it worked in 7 Days to Die, where you could just stick something on the campfire and then wander off.
Yep, pretty much, except you have limited space per fire. Well, I guess you do in 7 Days, except that limited space is just one. Depending on the type of thing you're cooking on in this game, you get more spaces. So if you find like a proper stove, you have up to 4 spaces. If you just start a campfire, you have like 2 flat rocks you can stick stuff on.
If you're using a spit, you get a certain amount?
Yeah, basically, So I started doing a pure survival mode. I'm like, man, I really need some sort of goal, because otherwise I'm going to burn out on this almost immediately. So instead...
Skull Fortress?
Skull Fortress?
Always a valid goal.
This is not a crafting game. It's just a survival game.
Ah, okay.
So you have to find the Skull Fortress and then move in.
Yes, exactly. So in the survival mode, I started in like the new area they added because I read an article about how awesome it was, and I spawned there, and I immediately left it because I was just exploring and like, wow, there are no resources. I should head this way. And then I found a place to not freeze to death, and that led me to a much more resource-rich town. So instead, I did a challenge I've been putting off forever, which is start all the way across the map from a place you need to get to, go to that place, which involves climbing a mountain creatively because you don't have any climbing rope, and then take a flare pistol, or, yeah, distress flare that you find at the top of that mountain, all the way down to a lighthouse on the other side of the map, all in a week. I don't think I'm going to make it. I think I'm going to run out of time. I have plenty of supplies. I'm not dying anytime soon, but I don't think I'm going to be able to scale the mountain and get to the lighthouse in time, which is sad.
Does that mean you can't get out or something like that? Or is it just a challenge to see if you can do it in a week?
Yeah, the challenge is just, can you do it in a week? And I'm pretty sure you just, like, lose the challenge if you don't do that. And then it, like, ends the challenge run. Like, there are a couple, like, specific scenarios.
Oh, it's like a specific scenario. It's not like the Nuzlocke run or something like that.
No, it's a specific scenario.
Okay, that's kind of what I was thinking, was that it was like a Nuzlocke type of deal.
No, like another one of the ones they have is spend 3 days in each of 15 different places, which is one of their easier ones, and that's usually the challenge I try because it's rated as the easiest. But I've never done it because it actually requires you to play the longest of any of them.
It's purely a matter of surviving that long.
Maintaining
interest that long.
Yeah, that's mostly my problem, is, like, the longest I've ever survived in a single run is, like, I don't know, like, 60 days or something, and that was after taking a month break in between and coming back to it. My problem is, I get to a point of sustainability a lot of places, and then, like, it ceases to be interesting because I'm not struggling anymore. Still, a fantastic game, and the update helps a lot. They've also tweaked stuff so it's slightly harder, but also slightly easier. You don't have to eat as often, but food is more scarce. Overall, good balance. Trying to think of what else I played, because there was definitely a thing.
Did you watch some My Hero Academia, or did you?
I did watch some My Hero Academia. I watched, I think, only the first two episodes, because that's what I had time for, because before I had to go do stuff. But I'm definitely going to watch more of that show now.
I guess I'm going to have to start watching a little bit of that, then, because everybody's saying it's really good.
I'm curious what you'll think, Zach. I think you will like it, but I don't
know. Probably end up being one of those shows that I have to be in a specific mood in order to watch it.
I don't know. It's shonen trash, but it's kind of shonen trash I'm really in the mood for right now. It's not even trash, actually. It's pretty
decent.
It's
very good shonen. It's Naruto, but it learned all the mistakes of Naruto.
To be fair, I was very drunk at the time, but the end of either the first or second episode, I think the second, did make me tear up a little bit.
It's pretty good. I think it is the second, I think, is what you're talking about. It didn't have that much power on me, but I was like, oh, this is a show I have to watch through at that point. Because it's
probably
very good.
Probably won't have that kind of effect on me because I don't
Zach
have emotions.
Zach hates sentimental crap.
I don't hate sentimental crap.
But it
sentimental
is
crap
the most American person of all saying this, so.
Well, sentimental crap doesn't have any kind of effect on me anyway.
On the other hand, you get All Might with such well-known attacks as Texas Smash and Detroit Smash, which, as far as I can tell, are literally the same attack.
Well, Detroit Smash is a lot more bankrupt.
Yeah, all his attacks are named after states except Detroit Smash, which makes me wonder if Detroit rebelled and became its own state in the My Hero Academia universe, and that is what I choose to believe.
Hey, I'm just saying it's...
I guess technically Carolina Smash is not named after a state, but it's also an attack where he uses both arms, so...
Oh, so it's the combined Carolinas. Yes. Excellent.
Anyway. No, it's just based off the Carolina Panthers.
Did you figure out what else you've been playing, Tyler?
No, but I have another thing.
Okay.
Is that phone thing you were doing earlier?
That phone thing I was doing earlier. So, I've been trying to convince Alex forever to get a new phone, because she can't actually charge her phone except by induction, which is kind of a problem, and it started having pixel problems with the camera, and the battery only lasts like 5 minutes.
Which one is induction?
You have a current, usually by an electromagnet, and you put a thing next to it, and the current in one induces a current in the other.
Is that the wireless charge?
Yeah.
Okay.
Induction. Anyway.
I still need to go over to the guys over there at the Sprint store and find out why mine wasn't charging via the cable, if I was just doing something wrong.
Yeah, and that's what happened to Alex, is that the port broke, which is apparently a very common problem on that model of phone. It was a highly customizable one where you could choose a bunch of parts, and I think they sacrificed durability in order to make the parts interchangeable, which was unfortunate. So anyway, we both ended up with Pixel 2 XLs, which was hilarious because she specifically said she didn't want one when she went in, and she got convinced over the course of 5 minutes to get one, because it turns out to not actually be much larger than her old phone. It's like maybe a quarter inch.
As opposed to the monolith that I use?
Yeah. I actually don't know that yours is much bigger than mine, but we shall have to compare phones. But as a result, last night I was like, wow, I should get some more games on my phone because I need to play more games, obviously. And I picked up some actually pretty cool looking RPG that I haven't gotten into yet. And the other thing I picked up, because this is what I was actually looking for, was some random fighting game. I'm like, there's got to be a decent fighting game on the mobile platform.
I mean, Street Fighter 2 is probably there somewhere, but...
Yeah, I mean...
I've heard good things about something called War Robots, but not actually bothered to check it out.
War Robots. I like the name. No, I actually bought myself a Bluetooth, definitely not 360 controller that has like a little clip on the end that you can stick your phone into. But I don't have it yet, so I can't use it with all the 90 million emulators I have on my phone. So I picked up Shadow Warriors 3? Apparently there are two others of these, which seems weird because I'm not sure what plot they're trying to continue with this. Imagine Soul Calibur, except without the million combos, which is a little disappointing. You have basically kick and whatever your primary weapon buttons are, but you can't really chain between them to create different attacks, which is a little disappointing.
It's also a little bit backwards, considering basically all of fighting game technology has been moving towards combos and that kind of thing. And hell, fighters and Arxis just automatically give you combos.
I think it's mostly because of the limitation of the mobile platform. This game's much more about timing and dodging, and then knowing when to counterattack, more than it is about being super aggressive and trying to get those combos.
That sounds boring.
I don't know, it's interesting. That's actually also how I play Smash, so it's very up my alley. But in addition to that, you have a million, it's, well, not a million, you have quite a few combinations of things you can do, so each piece of equipment has like five or six special attacks you can pick up that you can then pull off as additional combos. In addition to that, you have basically a super meter, and then each item may have a different super attack on it. So you end up with a ridiculous number of combinations, in addition to the fact that there are, like, I think eight different weapon styles. They all end up feeling kind of similar. They definitely have their strengths and weaknesses, like spear has ridiculous reach, but it takes forever to recover from any attack. I'm currently going double axes, which is not a style I thought I would ever like. Mostly they're just really fast and do ridiculous damage. There's not a whole lot to say about it. It's not, like, a particularly compelling game, and I'm probably going to bounce off of it pretty quickly, but I'm really enjoying it right now. So,
is it online versus, or is it just versus AI?
It's got both. So it's got, like, a campaign mode and, like, just a quick battle mode that you can do for paltry equipment rewards that get progressively harder, and also an online mode. I was hesitant to start the online mode, but it turns out that I was way over-leveled for having not played online at all. So I just wrecked chumps, and I have not yet ended my wrecking chump spree. But I'm doing like 12 times the damage as anyone else, which seems a little unfair. But...
yeah, I don't know what I think about scaling like that in a competitive fighting game. But it's probably not meant to really be a competitive fighting
game. Probably not.
Yeah, it's got like a quasi-ELO system where you gain points if you win and you lose points if you lose. And I think that should balance you out approximately for some combination of skill and equipment. But the fact that your equipment actually matters is kind of irksome.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty okay. It looks gorgeous, though, and the cutscenes are goddamn beautiful. I don't... like, someone hand-rendered every single pixel with loving care.
What else, Tyler?
I think that is more or less it. I played a fair amount of the assignment. What have you been up to?
Spending all my money.
Oh, on Dokkan Battle?
No, actually. I bought a new laptop because the one you gave me
finally
was dying. Well, it wasn't actually dead, but I was like, I need to pay my credit card. The laptop was like, this website is far too intense for me. And I was like, oh, no.
Wow. I actually need to get a new laptop. Mine's like 7 years old or something like that.
I was
going
to say, to be fair, that laptop was like 7 years old.
There's also 300 gigs on the hard drive that I cannot figure out what they are. I'm pretty sure they were there when you gave it to me.
Old versions of Windows.
I don't know. Like, I got a terabyte hard drive on my new laptop, because I'm like, and Tyler gave me his 500 gigs on it, and I filled that up somehow. And I got literally everything I want on it, and there's still 390 gigs full, and I'm like, where? How?
How much RAM does it have?
My new one, or that, the one you gave me?
The new one.
8 gig.
Okay.
So the same as my desktop, bizarrely.
Well, RAM is getting a little bit easier to put into it.
No, I was just wondering because that paging thing that Windows does where it has like a file for on-disk RAM, basically.
Yeah.
They have another thing that's like some other backup that's the equivalent amount that you can just disable outright if you don't need that feature. I think it's for hibernation. So, It's whatever your RAM is, double by default is taken up on hard disk space, but that's not that much for you.
Yeah. But also my car insurance and car registration and antivirus and something else all happened this week. So all my fun adult payments had to be made all at once, and I was not really expecting that.
Lovely.
I got my car payment coming up.
So the only video game I've been playing besides the assignment has been Digimon Cyber Sleuth, which I was playing last week. I don't know that I really have much to say about it. It's not a very good game, and the story was really bad until literally right before I had to leave to record the podcast, they suddenly figured out what foreshadowing and twists and, like, excitement were. And I was like, oh, crap. This story suddenly got interesting. Why? How? Why weren't you doing this for the first 24 hours of gameplay? Because according to the save file, that's how much I've been playing this game. And it's just been boring. Okay. Yep, next quest. Okay. I don't understand how I'm supposed to tell which characters are sexy in this game and which aren't. They all look the same. But this game seems to be judging these women for trying to be too sexy, and not these women, and I don't understand.
Wow.
Speaking of, I kind of felt that way about the story in Detective Pikachu the entire time I was playing. I'm like, okay, it's got to pick up sometime, and then it never did.
Oh, I wasn't expecting it to ever, and then it just suddenly was like, it, like, literally, I've been like, oh, this reveal would have been cool if it had been foreshadowed at all, and was not just literally pulled out of its ass. And at the end of the mission, it's like, ah, oh, all this stuff foreshadowed very slightly, just enough so you can get it, and then paid off. I'm like, what? What is going on? This is a reference to the second movie, and it's quite good, even if it's just a reference, but it also might be something more. When did this game start caring about anything?
When did this game suddenly have the right to kick ass?
When did the cute, annoying tsundere girl get, like, so violent she made an Omegamon suddenly, and it was rad? Why didn't this happen in the first chapter instead of the 10th?
They had to build up to that lack of plot twist.
They did, but they didn't. They didn't do that. If they'd been doing that the whole time, cool. But, so I'm halfway through the game now, and maybe that's where the game starts? I don't know.
That'd be, like, if it continues... Good, although I'm not sure how much game you have left.
It's 20 chapters, and I just completed chapter 10.
Okay.
So
assuming they're all of approximately equal length.
And I think it's probably fair to assume later ones would be longer, but lengthwise they've been kind of a bit all over the place, so.
So, tangentially related, because I've been looking for a good game to play, and I apparently have not been playing Disgaea for reasons. I'm sure I've asked this question before, but I can't remember the answer. How was Shinten 4?
Shinten 4?
Yeah, the one for the DS.
It's pretty good.
Okay, that is all. I might pick it up at some point.
I also got Hacker's Memory for basically free, so I like Cyber Sleuth enough to buy the spinoff.
Also, basically free is a good price.
Yeah,
so.
But it took a lot of credit card reward points, but...
That's how I bought my PlayStation 4, was a lot of credit card reward points.
I bought some really sweet wrenches with that recently, so...
I need to check and see how many reward points I currently have.
I also bought some new headphones, which feels like an adult purchase, but I guess isn't.
It's in-betweenish.
It's definitely more so than Digimon Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory, the sequel to a game I don't think is very good. I keep playing.
I was going to say, I survived the whole Steam summer sale recently without actually buying anything.
I think I bought one thing, but I can't remember what.
I bought Prince of Persia.
Technically speaking, I bought three things. I bought Prince of Persia, Frostpunk, and Steins Gate.
So speaking of Prince of Persia, the assignment this week... Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
I will preemptively say, I forgot how good this game was. Also, I forgot how bad this game was.
I actually kind of enjoyed this one. Yeah. And I'm not a big platformer person, so take that for what you will.
It's fun. It didn't age well, but we'll get into that.
It doesn't play super like a platformer in some weird ways. It's a lot.
It feels like Assassin's Creed, but like not?
Well, Assassin's Creed feels like this.
Yeah, okay, that's true. Yes. It's like an Assassin's Creed I enjoy more than most Assassin's Creeds.
It's because it doesn't have that big overworld making you go climb towers for no reason to get in the way.
Yeah, it's just all climbing towers all the time.
I like climbing towers in Assassin's Creed. It's doing everything else that I don't like. Because most of it is, follow this dude, follow that dude, go find this thing.
Do a mediocre combat.
And that's why everyone likes Black Flag, because just pirate ship battles.
Yes.
But no, we played its long predecessor, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. A sequel to that old Prince of Persia game from like 15 years before this game came out.
It's on our list. It's near the bottom. Yes. I think Ed and I liked it a lot more than anyone else.
Yes, that's absolutely
true. That is true.
I like this one a lot more.
Yeah, it's weird that this is where they went with that franchise.
It's actually also not that unusual for developers to do that.
But I feel like it's still a puzzle platformer with some sword fighting in it.
That's fair. I feel like the puzzles in this are so far removed from the puzzles in the first one that.
Sure, but I feel like it's the same. It's translating that to a 3D. I can really see how they got here. Even though they had some innovative ideas that kind of changed the whole thing. It's still a game about figuring out how you're going to get across a gap.
That is primarily navigation-based.
And you've got to think, what tools do I have that will let me get over there?
And they have a lot of cool tools to let you do that.
So this game, you can definitely tell, wanted to be Assassin's Creed in the future. Starting with its kind of storytelling gimmick, you're not in a VR machine reliving your ancestors' past, but you are kind of being told the story by the main character as it goes along, which leads to some fun stuff. Like, if you get a game over, he'll be like, oh, wait, that's not how it happened. Let me try again.
Yeah, that's like, not how that happened.
And then I jumped over this chasm, and then I guess it was too far for me to make it? No, that can't be right.
It allows for some dramatic irony, but it also in some ways makes the story seem really obvious. Like, he's like, yeah, we shouldn't have trusted that guy who betrayed us. That evil vizier. He was no good. Like, well, no. What, Jafar betrayed you? Never.
Why would he ever do such a thing?
He doesn't even have an Iago.
He forgot his parrot at home.
So the story's pretty basic. You find a magic time dagger. An evil vizier tricks you into stabbing a big hourglass, and you unleash a bunch of zombies, and you and girl have to save time.
Kind of. She's ostensibly helpful. She pulls levers for you in the background, but she's helpful like the person in...
She does all the basic NPC assistant things.
Yeah, but off screen mostly. What the hell is the name of that game? It was
Another World?
Yes. I wanted to call it that. I'm like, that's not right. That's not the title of a game.
It's a lot less interactive than that, though. She's mostly doing it kind of off-screen, or next to the screen. So the bulk of the gameplay is in getting over gaps, like I said. You have a bunch of different tools for doing this. You can run on walls, you can jump from wall to wall, you can hang on ledges.
You can eventually find things to stab your dagger down and do one of those sweet movie dagger slides or sword slides down a tapestry. You can also parkour in combat, although we haven't gotten there. Low-key, this is the game that made me ever want to get into parkour. So
yeah, I mean... Again, you can definitely tell that Assassin's Creed was born here.
This is also the game, Ed and I often joked about this, that the prince, just he and his father specifically had every town designed such that he never had to touch the ground while moving around.
But you're not even in your father's town. You go to someone else's town.
Yeah, you're in somebody else's city.
I do like the big puzzle to activate the palace's defenses, and then there are just spinning blades in your way now that you have to avoid.
It's one of those things where you have to question the design of the city or the palace when you're trying to figure this kind of thing out. And it's like, how does somebody get to work through here?
Well, to be fair, you have to turn them on. They are off by default.
Yeah, presumably they don't turn them on until an invasion, which actually begs the question because you're part of the invading army at first.
No, you're just...
No, you're like part of an allied force.
You're thinking of the prologue. In the prologue, you're invading. But then once you get the dagger,
you're absolutely correct.
The Sultan's place. And he's like, ah, fantastic.
It's an hourglass.
It looks very expensive, haha.
I sure hope no one stabs that with a time dagger. That would probably be detrimental.
So the bulk of the game is trying to figure out how to get across gaps. And one interesting thing it does is every save point, you get this little flash forward of all the stuff you're going to have to do, which doesn't really handhold you because it goes so fast, but it does give a very good indication of what you're supposed to do for if you get stuck.
Yeah, it shows you which direction you should move so that you don't accidentally try to run out over a gap repeatedly because you're like, I can jump to that, and then you can't.
Yeah, I kind of liked the flash forward, and you can go back to any save point and watch it again if for whatever reason you're getting confused or something like that trying to complete a challenge. So they did a pretty good job, I think, of kind of directing you.
Especially because this game is at its weakest when you don't know where to go.
Which does happen, actually.
Yep. There's one part in particular I can think of early on where it's teaching you how to move objects, and there are these four bookshelves, and one of them is in the way of a passage, but only one of them, so you have to figure out to move the bookshelves, and then you have to find the one that you need to move. It's not very well designed.
Huh.
As opposed to the Zelda puzzle, which teaches you how to move things, and you only have to move one thing, and then you move on.
Yeah.
And now you know it.
If there's only one bookshelf, it would have been a lot better. Or if, like, the other bookshelves had secret stuff behind them, so you could be like, oh, it's not this one, but I should check out what's behind those other bookshelves.
Which incentivizes her presence, at least.
It also incentivizes exploration.
Yeah. So, this game has four basic modes, and like I said, that's the worst one, figuring out where to go. The one it's by far the best at is the puzzle platforming parkour stuff, because it looks cool and it's fun and energetic. You feel like you need to time your stuff right to avoid buzzsaws and other stuff, and to not fall into pits. The other major one is combat, which plays pretty well for a game of its time, but the combat has not aged well. But Assassin's Creed is still using this combat system, so...
I kind of like the ideas behind this combat system and all that.
Yeah, you can
it's not the same kind of counter combat like Assassin's Creed has, but like being able to jump over the top of people and stuff. It feels and flows pretty well.
Yeah, like you can run off of walls and like do overhead strikes and stuff. The problem is there isn't really good auto-targeting, so you'll whiff a lot.
Yeah, I want to break it down even further than that. Because like I said, I don't think it's aged very well, but compared to what was around at the time, like Devil May Cry is the only contemporary that I feel like has a better combat system. Or I guess Halo and Doom, but those are kind of different genres. So
yeah, kind of a brawler combat system, because these are spiritual successors of brawlers in some respect.
So you have a basic sword attack, which is most of how you attack. You can also guard, and you can do a counter after a guard, or you can kind of dodge around. You can dodge over people, which does a cool parkour over their head, and then you can attack them in the back to avoid their guard. You also have a time dagger you can stab people with, which will freeze them. But the majority of enemies can't be killed. You have to beat them until you're down and then stab them with the time dagger, which actually reminds me a lot of Arkham Asylum's beating people when they're down to finish them off. Only here, it's the only way to beat people.
I kind of like that idea because it makes the dagger feel more important, and it's supposed to be an important aspect, and it makes the zombies feel a lot less like just standard beat-em-up brawler guys.
Yeah, that's why only you can be the hero, because you're only the guy... You're the only guy with a special time dagger.
It also makes you prioritize your targets to try and separate them so you can get a time dagger stab off one of them or get a bunch down. The one thing I don't like is this game can only really handle about 3 or 4 enemies at once, and it wants to give you longer combat encounters. So a lot of times as soon as you time dagger a zombie, another one will pop in, and it feels like you're not accomplishing much.
Yeah, because where it's supposed to remove that enemy from combat... And now he's just got a new guy that shows up. Is kind of like, am I really making a dent? Like, is this really doing anything?
I feel like a simple voice line saying like, oh, only 7 left. Because the prince is kind of a snarky asshole the entire time anyway.
Like, yeah, I just don't like it from a... In Arkham, when you take a guy out, you feel accomplished because you've taken this guy out of the fight. And now there's one fewer for you to worry about.
Which also makes the fight easier. Like, it's kind of a positive feedback.
I also feel the fights in this game just go on too long, because while it's got a pretty good combat system, it is pretty repetitive. You pretty much just jump over dudes, avoid their attacks, and stab them.
Yeah, the combats did feel like they lasted about 2 enemies too long, in my opinion.
And you have this cool sheathing your sword animation at the end of each of them to tell you the combat's over, which is cool, but it gets a little boring and it takes just a little too long. The other major sort of gameplay it has to give you are puzzles, which are kind of all over the place.
They vary wildly in quality, I think.
I only did one, which was like you had to pick up these axles on this, like it was this multi-tiered platform, but the axles had to go through a path, and you had to get all 4 of them to the top, so you had to figure out what order to grab them in. It wasn't very hard, especially because there was a helpful NPC who would be like, no, don't grab that one yet. It's too early, Prince.
I'm like, oh, God.
Jerk, you come down here and do this. Or he'd be like, that's the wrong way. I'd be like, I know, I couldn't figure out which way the controls worked. Thanks, buddy.
Try to avoid playing this on a mouse and keyboard. It handles really badly.
Yeah, I'll get to that point in a second because there are some technical problems. But this game can be really hand-holdy at times. I think because it knows the most fun is when you're in the parkour stuff, and it wants you to get you there as fast as possible. I don't think it should have only been the parkour stuff, because you do need things to break it up, but you can definitely tell where this game is strong and where it's weak.
Now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of this reminds me of Cloud Build, which is basically this game if it was a speedrun game, which is...
Did it come after this game, though?
Oh yeah, it came substantially after this game.
So it's probably heavily influenced by it. If you're playing the PC port, there are some issues. You have to turn fog off because...
Otherwise, you won't be able to see anything.
Otherwise, you play this game in the Shadow Realm, which could be a cool challenge. I'm sure some speedrunners can do it like that, but...
Because they just know where everything is.
Yeah, I am not one of them. Also, like Zach was saying, it can be a little hard to map to a controller, and I don't know why. Like, it's just a little stiff in mapping. Once I did it, it wasn't a problem, but it took me like 10 minutes on the controller like change screen to get everything mapped correctly.
Huh. Apparently the D-pad is not a button it recognizes.
It wouldn't recognize the shoulder buttons for some actions, but it would for others. It was very strange.
Despite buying a copy of this game on Steam, I just emulated it, so it wasn't really a problem for me. But
we haven't talked about the like most innovative thing this game introduced yet.
The Sands of Time part?
Yeah, which is your magic time dagger, which not only can you use to stab people and freeze them in time or defeat them, but you can use it to rewind after you mess up either in the middle of combat and take a hit you shouldn't have, or when, more likely when you mess up a platforming segment and fall on a bed of spikes.
But you, the thing is, you can't use that the time dagger as bullet time, right?
You can't. You can slow down time if you tap it. That's a different resource.
Okay.
But you can do it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I couldn't remember because I didn't get quite that far.
And that's useful on some of the more difficult platforming things where you got a lot of moving parts and you need to
dodge. I know that this, I think this one came out fairly close to the Matrix films and, you know, when bullet time was the hotness.
It was about 3 years later, but yes, it was about peak Matrix. It was written along the time of the sequels, so it definitely could have been an influence. But this basically replaces your lives because you have a limited number of times you can rewind. And every time you kill an enemy, you recharge one. So the combat helps recharge your chances in a platform section.
Yeah, so sometimes you're like, man, I sure was anticipating this combat because I ran out of retries on that platforming section.
I mean, I kind of like the idea because it also, the idea of a rewind mechanic also kind of moved over to a couple of other locations. Like, I first encountered the whole rewind mechanic in Dirt 2.
And like,
we had a certain amount of rewinds per race, which I thought was kind of cool.
And like, this is the first game I know of that did it.
I can't think of any before.
Quick tangent, is there an explanation to why you can do that in Dirt 2?
You're not a professional rally driver.
And that's why you can rewind time in your head?
No, it's just, I think that's the idea. You're not a professional rally driver, you're not a professional driver in general. So you're going to make mistakes. So the...
He's asking, are you a time genie?
No, yeah. They don't explain it, it's just a game mechanic.
Yeah, no, and that was my headcanon, is that you have this remarkable ability to rewind time 5 seconds, and you're like, you know what the most useful purpose for this is? Stock car racing.
It's not stock car, it's rally.
It is rally, you're right. I miss it.
And then Forza 3 also did it, but I was talking to Jeremy about this on the way down. Forza 3, they have infinite rewinds, whereas the Dirt games are limited.
No, I like limited
by definition, or limited by difficulty. So the higher difficulty you are, the less you have.
So I think that's a good transition into what the influence, I think, of the time rewind mechanic was. Because in a weird way, it's just here to replace lives, which is a mechanic that was starting to feel a little unneeded.
But this feels so much cooler.
It does, but later Prince of Persia games would just give you infinite rewinds in the way that I feel like most platformers now give you infinite retries on your missed jumps.
Which ones?
Well, I'm thinking specifically, I want to say 2010 Prince of Persia. It's when
the Xbox 360 one?
Yeah, it's when they stopped doing sequels and did a soft reboot.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say, the two sequels of this definitely keep the time mechanic, and the reboot was heavily panned for not having it, although it was still a pretty good game, so...
I feel like what this led to was less like time rewind stuff and more just very generous checkpointing. One of the advantages of rewinds over the checkpointing is you get to pick where you want to rewind to, which is nice.
Well, especially if you get across a couple of challenging bits, but you know the checkpoint is before those challenging bits, and you screw up something, you can rewind back to try that particular part again without having to do the parts before it again.
But I feel like now most platformers like this, just every time you complete a jump or a challenge, just automatically checkpoint you there. I'm thinking specifically of Super Meat Boy, but I feel like a lot of other ones do it as well.
Well, I don't think Meat Boy... checkpoints you just have very short levels.
Well, that's true, but basically the same thing.
Yeah. Without this game, does Braid happen?
I don't know. Braid's a weird animal, right? I certainly think it had influence, but I think a lot of it just gave people a lot of like permission to make things easier in some interesting ways, which then lets you make things harder.
Yeah, the individual pieces you have to complete are harder, but then you don't have to complete as many of them in a row.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, I prefer, but I can see
the arguments
either direction.
I like the idea of being able to create like harder individual challenges because you've given the player more resources. I mean, it's kind of the same way as to why we get regenerating health in shooters, is because that way the developers know exactly how much health the character is coming into any given challenge with.
What was the name of that game that came before River City Ransom? Or am I thinking of River City Ransom?
Since you haven't described what game you're thinking of exactly, we can't tell you if you're thinking
before River City Ransom.
I know it's what he means. I can never remember the name of it.
If you're thinking of River City Ransom, we can't tell you what the one before it was.
Yeah. Oh, God. What was it called?
Yeah, because of the same people also made Super Dodgeball.
I can't remember what it's called. I know what game you're talking about, though. But it had the regenerating health on every screen.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we lauded that game for, was the fact that each room is like a set encounter. And then you go on to the next room and you start over with all your resources. Which, to be fair, is a much older game, but I think it took us a while to learn that lesson, or for people to start thinking it was a good idea, I guess.
Well, a lot of people really hate regenerating health. I don't mind regenerating health because I like that idea of the developer knows exactly what kind of resources the player is going to probably be starting with.
Yeah, it's not sitting to suck your thumb regenerating. It's you finish a screen and then you go into the next screen and you have full health again.
Yeah, I know.
But that lets you do, like, set encounter pieces a different way. I don't hate regenerating health. I just hate that every game is regenerating health.
It's a trend.
It's not even a trend. It's overwhelming. It's
more than standard. There are very few games that don't have regenerating health. I think they're basically Wolfenstein and Doom.
Trust me, I've been going to a lot of breweries recently, and it's been fun to watch brewery trends. Everything is overwhelmingly IPAs, and now everything's switching to brut beer. It's weird. I don't know why people do this. Or, like, I've been seeing
Because they chase the most popular thing.
Yeah, like, I've been seeing a lot of micro-eateries, like, Americana eateries, and everything's duck fat right now. I don't get why, but it's like everything is duck fat.
Is there anything more you want to say about Prince of Persia? I haven't... Oh.
Yes, I had a very specific thing. Okay. And that's all the witty banter you have back and forth with Pharaoh over the course of the game, because you get increasingly asshole-ish with each other, as it's obvious you...
Get more and more Han and Leia as it goes on.
Exactly, yes. It's just a fun dynamic, and, like, the majority of the conversations that the prince has that aren't his own internal monologue as he's telling the story are these fun interactions with Pharaoh, where they're basically just calling each other names and being dicks to each other, while also helping each other advance, which is, I don't know, it's a fun dynamic, and one that I remembered fondly, and it's still, like, there are still some pretty amusing lines of dialogue they exchange.
Yeah, the banter in it's very good, like, just the prince's one-lines are pretty on point, even if they're a little cliche. I don't feel like we've really captured what's fun about this game, but it just works really well. The parkour stuff is fun to execute every time you do it.
Yeah, it just, like, it feels good to move around the environment.
I would definitely agree with that.
And I find weird that this game kind of comes when 3D platformers are kind of at a nadir. Like, after this, you only really get the Mario sequels still doing the 3D platformer thing. But this presents a completely different time of 3D platformer that doesn't have any sort of collection basis. It's just about presenting individual challenges. And I find it really weird that we didn't get anyone chasing after this game in that way. Like, Super Mario Galaxy kind of goes that way, more so than Sunshine had before it. But it still got some of those 3D elements. I find it weird that 3D platformers just kind of fizzled out instead of trying this new avenue.
Especially since clearly... I think this game is both critically and commercially successful.
I think the reason for that might be this comes out real close to Halo, doesn't it?
A little bit after Halo. But I think,
and on top of that, this was GameCube exclusive, right?
At first it was. I think it got to PS2 and maybe Xbox later.
Yeah, so
I don't want to be quoted on that.
Yeah, definitely the sequels were on Xbox, I know.
So I think that might be wise, because the GameCube didn't have as large of a market share to start with.
That's true. You have
the emergence of the Xbox and Halo and all that stuff.
But it takes a while for Halo to, like, take over the market, right?
Not really.
I can't think of a lot of first-person shooters on Xbox besides Halo.
That's because Halo pretty much took over.
Yeah, but, like, it's not until Call of Duty 4 that there starts to be
a lot of other franchises in there. There are other platformers in that idea that came out and bombed so hard that
people
looked at them and, like, yeah, it's a platformer, but...
So this might have been too little too late.
And on top of that, people might have been looking at a little bit of fatigue, because on the N64 you had a bunch.
To be fair, like, I feel like a lot of modern sandbox games are directly derived from this, simply based on their movement mechanics.
That's because a lot of them are made by Ubisoft,
It looks like it was actually tri-platform. It looks like PlayStation 2 came out a week later, but GameCube and Xbox were simultaneous, and Windows was about 3 months later. And PlayStation 3 was 10 years later. Yeah, it's weird to me that this game didn't have a bunch of copycats because of its success. Like, it could have been a way 3D platformers win. It pretty much is the way, because, like I said, Mario Galaxy works more like this than Mario Sunshine.
When I feel like Assassin's Creed came out and people were like, ooh,
open world games,
you can just climb over stuff. And that's kind of how all sandbox games work now.
Yeah, I certainly don't blame Ubisoft for not wanting to make more of this game, especially when they did 4 times and it didn't work.
Somehow? I don't know how. All of them were good.
Well, none of them are this good, for sure.
I don't know. I actually like the second one better. So.
Really? Okay. Yep. I've never heard that opinion before, but... Maybe someday we'll play the second one.
To be fair, I did power through all 3 of these in a weekend with an audience, so...
This is the only one of these I've actually played, so...
Only one I've played.
But I really like it. I think it's going to rank well. So do we have any other final thoughts on this game?
It's fun. Just get a controller for it.
Yeah, it's It's a solid game, and it holds up pretty well. It's, like, it's a little bit clunky in hindsight, but definitely not unplayable by any stretch.
Yeah, it's a little bit hand-holdier than I remember, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It definitely feels intentional at the very least. So speaking of ranking high, we have a list on our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, listing all the games we've played from best to worst. At the top is Chrono Trigger, another game with some time travel, although much longer term. At the bottom is City Connection,
a game where you move up and down platforms at high speeds.
A game I wish I had time travel to go back and not play.
And in the middle is Tecmo Bowl.
A game.
A game that would be improved by a rewind mechanic. Maybe. I don't know.
Provided the game is not trying to bilk you for quarters on your home console.
Hear me out really quick, though. Chrono Bowl? I would maybe play it if both you and the opposing, instead of having timeouts,
I would play an NFL football RPG.
Does that not already exist?
It must, but
I'm
not
Football Manager or something?
No, I mean like turn-based football combat.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that's called Blood Bowl.
That's more of a tactical game.
There was a
I am splitting hairs a little bit.
There's a board game that's that.
Apparently the guy who made Madden Football was trying to make a tabletop football game first, and then it just eventually became Madden. But the place we have to start for this game is the original Prince of Persia, right down at number 214. And this game's way better than that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that. I'm totally kidding.
The original Prince of Persia holds a weird soft spot in my heart, but this game is so much better.
That's because there's something wrong with you.
Like, it's very methodical. You have to think through everything. It's a very precise game.
My eyebrows don't go up any higher than this.
So then we got to start comparing it to influential 3D platformers. So, like, we have to scroll way, way, way up to number 39 with Super Mario 64. I don't really know that there's anything between there that makes a better comparison point. At least nothing I can think of. So, gameplay-wise, this game holds up a lot better than Mario 64, but like I...
It's also a lot newer, which...
Yeah. But like I was talking about earlier, it didn't really have an influence.
Which is...
Yeah, but I think it's a better game.
I don't know, like, I like the ability to explore in Mario, which you don't really have in this game. Like, this game is go forward, mostly.
Yeah, but it's got more interesting environments, even if you're not necessarily exploring every bit of them.
I actually disagree. I kind of, the environments in this game kind of samey. They're all kind of, you know, vaguely Persian, sand, and dungeon.
Yeah, decayed urban, basic, or decayed urban of the time.
And it's all one very samey color palette.
On the other hand, it does have that cool time rewind mechanic.
It does.
Which is pretty awesome.
It's got a cool time rewind mechanic and better combat mechanics than Mario does.
I almost feel like Mario's combat holds up better, but only almost. I think especially if you're just comparing it to games of the time, Prince of Persia's combat's way better.
Yeah, I don't know. This is legitimately a hard decision for me.
Me too. I know
it's from a playability standpoint, Prince of Persia's just so much better. It holds...
Playability? Really?
The combat works a lot better. Mario looks like ass when you look back at it.
That's not playability.
Yeah.
Well, the feel of the game, it handles a lot better just by default. And I was playing this on a keyboard and mouse, remember?
Yeah, so I'm actually, that's what I'm objecting to, is like Mario 64 actually handles really well.
Yeah, those controls hold up.
Speed mechanic, like there's a reason people speedrun it all the time. I don't know how many people speedrun Prince of Persia.
It's also got a community. I don't know that it's as big as Mario 64, but it certainly exists. Yeah, to me it kind of comes down to playability versus influence. Super Mario 64 certainly had more influence, but I think for a lot of good reasons. Like I said, though, it's super weird to me that Prince of Persia didn't have more influence. Like, because we don't even really see 3D games take these movement mechanics. Like, a lot of shooters could have been improved by just little movement sections like this, and no one tried it.
Actually, a lot of them do now.
Well, now, 20 years later.
Yeah, I feel like, what?
15 years later, I
guess. Who started that, though? Like, Titanfall? Or was it around before that?
Yeah, like, I think
really
in the last
depends,
couple of years that started to happen.
Because Mirror's Edge came out first, and then I think somebody saw that and was like, let's give him a gun. And that's when we got Titanfall.
Yeah, but that's... I don't feel like that really is influenced by Prince of Persia. Except for maybe, like, in a grandchild sense. Yeah, so what are your... You like Prince of Persia probably the most of us, Tyler. What are your feelings on if it goes above or below?
Yeah, and this is hard. Like, I feel like a little bit of aesthetic difference would really make this an easier choice for me. Yeah, it's got kind of a cliched story, but the banter is good. The Prince's one-liners are just spot on all the time.
You know, as opposed to the original and epic story, Mario 64
yep,
is well known
exactly.
for.
Exactly. It does have pretty solid mechanics, although they kind of wear after a while, or a combat mechanic specifically. As much as I love the movement in Mario 64, just like the sheer badassery of the parkour in this, I think I would have to give it to Prince of Persia. Very slightly.
I think I actually agree. So I just wanted you to make the decision.
Fair enough.
So then the only other 3D platformer I think we have above that is Banjo-Kazooie. Banjo-Kazooie is a more fully formed version of Super Mario 64. I do think it holds up a little better. Part of that is that Xbox 360 remake gave it a graphic overhaul and fixed a lot of the technical limitations with it.
I don't know, you got that sweet overworld that is itself at its own level.
Banjo-Kazooie, I feel like, has a lot more character. Like, you have the prince in this one with all these witty one-liners, and that one you have Gruntilda, though, and her kind of terrible but great rhymes.
And the silly board game puzzle at the very end.
Yeah.
I prefer Prince of Persia.
Are you going to elaborate on that point?
Well, I think Prince of Persia's got more fun combat. I like the parkouring sections more than Banjo-Kazooie, and Banjo-Kazooie's collectathon bored me.
Yeah, it's weird because Banjo-Kazooie to me is like an exploration game that happens to involve platforming.
Yeah, it's just that's the way platformers were for a while. And like, yep. I said, it's weird to me that Prince of Persia didn't spark a revolution in them.
I think I would have to give it to Banjo-Kazooie very slightly, but I don't know. I could be swayed by a compelling argument.
My gut says Banjo-Kazooie, but I'm not really willing to cast my vote yet, as it were.
Like, so Banjo-Kazooie is super colorful. It's got a lot, like, it's got a lot of sense of humor.
Yeah,
it's
like,
got a lot
both
of quirkiness.
Games have a lot of personality. And
yeah,
I
exactly.
think in personality, Banjo-Kazooie wins. But that's not the only or even most important area of a video game.
Like, Banjo-Kazooie gives you a lot of different ways to move around. Prince of Persia, it's more fun to move around.
Yeah, it's also a lot more limited. Like, there is a weird thing in Prince of Persia I didn't talk about, that a lot of times it feels like you're just following a movie script as you're getting through here, and the flash forwards add to that feeling. It feels almost preordained. That said, it is very fun while you're doing it.
I'll take the more fun mechanics to actually interact and engage with the game from Prince of Persia than being able to run around in a different fashion in Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, but like Banjo-Kazooie has a lot of fun mechanics. Like,
the puzzles in Banjo-Kazooie,
they all
certainly
feel
a lot
the
more fun.
Same. Dude. Moving around in Banjo-Kazooie all feels the same. You're either moving around slightly faster, or you're moving around without touching the ground, but it all feels the same
way.
I
feel like flying in Banjo-Kazooie feels very different than walking around in it.
You have a lot of different ways to interact with enemies. You can shoot eggs, you can like barrel through them, you can jump on them, you can punch them.
You can use the invincibility to.
But it's not
them.
Fun to do that. I found the Prince of Persia combat fun.
Yeah, I kind of didn't find the Prince of Persia combat fun. Certainly not more fun than the Banjo-Kazooie.
Well,
combat.
Being able to dodge around, jump over the top of people, and having to actually plan out when you're going to get your chance at using the dagger to get rid of an opponent.
Yeah, there was a lot more. There was more strategy going on there.
Certainly, you do have to, like I said, figure out how to separate your opponent so you can get one with the dagger.
Then when you roll into the rest of it, your time powers, being able to rewind, to retry something, to prevent damage, to freeze an enemy in place, to slow down time. You know, that kind of ideas are far more interesting than I fired an egg out my ass.
Those are all good high points, but the combat in Prince of Persia goes on too long, and the combat in Banjo-Kazooie is always like one enemy, so it's brief. The combat in Prince of Persia is better, but it also overstays its welcome. It's not as much better as it thinks it is.
So does the Easter egg hunting from Banjo-Kazooie. That's all the game is.
Yeah, I'm like, that speaks to my OCD a lot.
Yeah,
so.
But as I say, you're talking to two people who find that fun. I do think I am leaning a little bit towards Prince of Persia now.
Well, I think that's two votes for, because I don't think I was swayed, but I was also only slightly
like,
in favor.
I could still be unswayed if you have anything else
I
to
don't
say.
Have a strong argument, though, is okay. my problem. Like, I feel like maybe Banjo-Kazooie, just because I like exploration more than parkouring through environments, but like it's a very, very slight preference.
Okay, then. So does Prince of Persia go into the top 25? Is it better than Sonic the Hedgehog 2? Sonic is
a pretty good game.
For a lot. There's a lot of similarity to them. Like, they're both about traversing a space quickly.
Yeah.
And trying to avoid what's in your way. I think Sonic is a little more fun, actually. It doesn't have those feelings I was talking about in Prince of Persia, where the enemies overstay their welcome and the stuff feels a little preordained. I feel like I'm making more choices in my small movements in Sonic 2. So my preference is definitely for Sonic 2.
My slight argument against is that I feel like some of the levels in Sonic 2 stay a little too long.
Level 2. Is the
chemical
one that
plant zone. Yeah, I am thinking of that chemical plant zone part where you're riding the elevators now, and it's not great.
But the thing is, if you get good enough at it, you can actually avoid most of that part. So.
Yeah, you can pretty much speed your way through it.
I don't know, this is a tough choice, because they're both pretty good games.
So I've been sitting here trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I think I would have to give it to Prince of Persia on basis of innovation.
crap. You're making me choose.
Yeah, Sonic perfected its own recipe. Prince of Persia, I should have breathed new life into a genre, I think.
Well, the thing is, like, I'm legitimately trying to think, because, like, they're both really good, but do I honestly think Prince of Persia is better or worse than Sonic? And I can't actually say one way or the other.
I mean, for what it's worth, while I think I prefer Prince of Persia, I think Sonic is a better implementation of a genre than Prince of Persia is. Like, it is, I think, the best Sonic game that we're ever going to get. I haven't played 3 yet, though, so maybe I will be pleasantly surprised.
3 has some good stuff.
I think I gotta give it to Prince of Persia. I think the game, like, it's got the innovative mechanics.
It does have that time dagger.
It's got an actual, like, story to it instead of just get to the end. And, like, the moving around the map feels a lot more fun with Prince of Persia.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's more fun for me to run up walls than it is for me to...
Because there are a lot less instances of where the game, you hit that one bumper or something like that in Sonic and you just go flying. It looks cool. It's kind of fun to do, but sometimes it's just... basically take control from you for a couple seconds.
Or you lose all momentum.
So right above Sonic 2 is Mega Man 2. And if Prince of Persia can get past that, it's going to probably leapfrog. But I don't think it's better than Mega Man 2. I don't think it's nearly as tight. The different weapons in Mega Man Fun, I think, are a lot more fun to use than the solid but samey combat system in Prince of Persia. And I think it's just a very, very good example of a platformer. Which I guess Prince of Persia is as well. But I definitely prefer Mega Man 2.
You also have a lot more variety in Mega Man 2. Not that I'm...
more variety of enemies and of locales.
Yeah. I don't know. They're surprisingly very different games, despite being kind of similar games. That's a tough question. I feel like this is a buzz of deliberation we've had on ranking something in a long time.
Because it's going very high. Like, when was the last time we were here? It was Harvest Moon 64. It's right above Mega Man 2. But the higher you get, the more it's hard to say, right?
Yep. That's why I generally say, like, I pretty much without hesitation recommend anything in, like, the top 30, but...
I think you go down to 50 and they're all pretty solid. I can't remember what the whole, everything on the list is.
This game is going to kick Super Mario Brothers out of the top 30.
Because
it's 30 right now.
Jeremy wanted Super Mario Brothers to be the baseline, remember?
Look, I was dumb. Yeah, too bad. It's very good, it turns out.
Too bad it's too good.
I think, personally, I would rather play Prince of Persia to Mega Man, but I don't necessarily think Prince of Persia is better than Mega Man.
Yeah, and I think I would have to give it to Mega Man because it's very tightly designed. It is what it is, a lot better than Prince of Persia is. Although, man, I would love to see a game that is Prince of Persia as good as Mega Man 2 is.
That would be great. Maybe Assassin's Creed 27 will finally get there. But for now, Prince of Persia will go at number 25, above Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and below Mega Man 2.
So
much better. Almost 200 spots ahead of Prince of Persia.
I think this is also the first game we've had that's actually made it into the top 50 in, like, the last 5 or 6 episodes, at least.
Definitely the last 5 or 6. Like I said, Harvest Moon 64, I think, is the last one that got kind of close.
I mean, most of the games we've played are mediocre at best, so they end up in that bottom section. But getting into the top 50 is, like, a hell of an achievement.
That actually also pushed Mega Man 3 out of the top 50.
All right, so I finally got Prince of Persia out of my system. I've been wanting to call it for months and months. But it's now your turn again to pick a game, Jeremy.
So looking at those old games with the number 2 at the end, I was thinking about, what franchises have we not visited in a while?
Ocarina of Time?
No.
Warcraft?
Oh. No. And also, because I'm watching My Hero Academia, I'm thinking about Naruto a lot, because I feel like they're structurally very similar.
Ninja Gaiden?
Yeah, let's play Ninja Gaiden 2.
Okay.
Oh, this is going to go badly.
Yeah, so next time on Last Time, Zach will be mad.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2018. All games, movies, and other media mentioned in this podcast are copyright their respective owners. If you wish to listen to more episodes, visit us at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can see the entire archive. If you wish to get in contact with us, you can email us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. This episode is over. Try listening to another one?